Thank you. And to those of interest, a reminder that in line with the Code of Conduct, any declaration of interest may be declared immediately prior to the item in question. Public participation had none. Well, the first item is 6 members of the Houses Scheme 2018-19.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is the time of the year when we always have a look at members' allowances, and no doubt all members will remember the end of the debate at last year's members' allowances agenda item, when we definitely said that perhaps the way forward would be to look at CPI or RPI or a particular government guideline that we thought was appropriate, and that we asked officers at the time to go away and have a look at perhaps introducing this system for years to come, which, if my memory serves me correctly, most members were in support of. Therefore, members, this will lead you into the report this evening, which shows at 7.1 that is actually what has been suggested to us here this evening. CPI is the inflation index that has been selected, and you will see in that paragraph that it is at 3.1 per annum. But what is being recommended to us is in actual fact an increase of 2%, which reflects a lot of what is going on in local government generally. And all the people that serve, perhaps from the public purse, the police, the fire service, the National Health Service, etc. Members, you will see from 8 that they are the usual things that we are shown every year, which is the basic allowance, responsibility allowances, and all the other childcare and independent carers allowances. I will not go through those, members, because I'm sure that all of you are fully aware of what they are, as they are roughly the same. The Appendix A shows the position at the moment and the position going forward, should this be supported this evening. And equally, I believe Appendix B, although there are some bits in black that should actually be in red, do actually show not only our neighbours in the county of Hertfordshire, but also those authorities that are used for comparators. And as members, you will notice that we are still nowhere near the top of either set of figures. So, members, if we could turn straight to the recommendation that the Council agrees a members' allowance scheme for the financial year 2018-19. And I'm recommending to Council here this evening that to avoid any large periods or large gaps that may come in the future, and also in the spirit of the debate that happened last year, I am recommending to Council this evening that we use the CPI inflation index route and we look at a 2% increase for members' allowances across the board. Thank you.
Councillor Cunningham.
Mr. Chair, I want to accept the recommendation to reserve my right to speak.
Everybody. Councillor Radcliffe.
Well, we're back in this position again and again. I think it's quite accurate to say that all public sector workers are getting a 2% pay rise. I don't think they are. Not in my experience at the moment, so not everybody's getting this rise across the public sector. This recommendation once again shows that this administration has difficulty in listening to its constituents. Despite not listening to the independent remuneration panel over a number of years, not listening to the community when it tells you it doesn't want the brand being charged, and the fact that constituents were up in arms at last year's pay raise, you still decide that pay rise is a good idea. Clearly, we are not all in this together when NHS, fire service staff and public sector workers have not seen that level of pay rise over the last 7 years, let alone 2 years. Perhaps this council should be on a payments by results scheme, but I guess with the museum town hall debacle, church gate, the closure of the playgrounds, then you'd be owing the council money. As you keep telling us, there is no money for councils due to your austerity measures, yet you award yourself a pay rise when other people in our community may need it. I will not be supporting this and will be asking for a recorded vote as well.
Councillor Lobo.
Thank you, Chairman. This is an evidently sensible proposal. I think that we have often been in the position where we haven't taken any increases in our allowances, and then suddenly, as last year, a larger increase is agreed, and obviously in front of me with that, which spread over the years doesn't equate to a large figure. It is eminently sensible. I think it's county too. I think they have smaller regular rises each year, and there is no. It all comes out of the same part, What it looked like, I remember the hiatus last year that was engendered by the opposition parties. I wonder if it would be possible this evening, if anybody stands and speaks against it, they could just confirm that having voted against it last year and spoken against it last year, that they actually turned down the rise when it was paid from April. So that would be very helpful, because to have spoken against it and voted against it and taken it would have been the highest hypocrisy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually want to ask a question on the item 12 of the scheme, which is pensions. When I was first re-elected after my sabbatical, I started pensions being deducted, and I was then told we do not have a pension scheme currently. So I'm surprised to see it mentioned. Could I have some clarification of why that is there? And, yeah, should it be there? Obviously, it needs to be reviewed.
Councillor
Neagle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I actually do agree with Councillor Clark. I think it does need an explanation. I do know that when Mr. Pickles was the minister at DCLG, he did decide that all councillors' pensions should be ceased, and certainly there was a lot of literature around at that time saying that councillors' pensions would be ceased, and I understand that there was a huge backlash from councillors right across the United Kingdom. So I have assumed that, bearing in mind what is in the appendices, that the councillors won the day and that the scheme did cease. But I take Councillor Clark's point that perhaps we could have some clarification.
Councillor Toomey-Bell.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to clarify, Mr. Pickles on this occasion did win the day. The council pension scheme has been withdrawn and no longer exists. It is an ex-pension scheme. It is no more. I can't remember the rest of that scheme, so I haven't thought about it. The other thing I wanted to say was that one of the things that's really, I think, quite demeaning for councillors is to spend a lot of time debating their allowances. So I would like to suggest that we move swiftly to the vote. And just to answer Councillor Loveworth's point about hypocrisy, no one's going to call me a hypocrite, mate. Actually, members of the Labour Group may find that they donated the increase that they took to charity as a matter of their own principles. You have your principles without ours.
Anyone else wish to speak to others? I will proceed to the vote. It will be a recorded vote.
Councillors, as I call your name, would you please answer for, against, or abstain? Councillor Albers?
Against.
Barnard?
For.
Billing Clare?
Against.
Billing Judy?
Against.
Bishop?
For.
Booth?
For.
Clark?
Against.
Cunningham?
For.
Davidson?
For.
Dennis?
Against.
Ding?
Against.
Frost?
For.
Gray?
For.
Green?
For.
Grimble?
Against.
Harris?
Against.
Hemingway?
For.
Hound?
For.
Hunter?
For.
Jarvis?
Yes.
Levitt?
Four.
Ludwell?
Four.
Mantle?
Again.
Marmot?
Four.
Millard?
Four.
Needham?
Four.
Patterson?
Four.
Radcliffe?
Against.
Rice?
Four.
Sandler?
Against.
Shakespeare Smith?
Four.
Shanley?
Four.
Spencer Smith?
Four.
Stevens Hanscom?
Against.
Strong? Fay?
For.
Weeks?
For.
There's no councillor present whose name I have not called. Thank you, Chair. I'll just have those.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. As members will notice, this is the report of the Chief Executive, which falls within his responsibility as the Council's returning officer. It again is the same report that we get to this Council meeting every year, and he is recommending to you the increases as outlined in the report. The report is very short and to the point, members, so I will not go through each of the sets of the paragraph, but I would recommend to the Council that the scale of the electoral services fees for the coming year 18-19 as set out in Appendix A be agreed.
Councillor Cunningham.
I wish the opportunity for a second. Reserve my right to speak.
Have we debated? In that case, we proceed to the vote. Those all in favour? Those against? Carried. Item 8, Council Tax Reduction Scheme 2018-2019. Councillor Cunningham.
Thank you, Chair. As members will be aware, this is again another of those reports that we get annually because we have to approve this scheme annually. Before discussing the paper in front of you, I'll give you one small update on paragraph 5.8 and basically to confirm we haven't received any comments from either County or the Police and Crime Commissioner. I'm told that that is pretty much part of the course. If they had anything to say, they would have told us. Members will be aware that the Council has a legal obligation to operate a Council Tax Reduction Scheme and has done so since 2013-14. To simplify what is a hideously complex set of arrangements, in principle, the terms the Council has chosen are to reflect the old Council Tax Benefit Scheme and then to amend these in the fashion as out in Section 7.4 on page 19 of your report. Essentially, pensioners and their dependents' benefits are protected on the same basis as under the old scheme. Further, to comply with government directive that any new scheme should incentivise work, the earnings disregard within the scheme are increased by 50%. Given that government support for all such schemes was reduced at inception by 10%, councils had to decide how this reduction in support should be applied to those in receipt of the non-protected benefits. NHGC initially opted to reduce all benefits paid to non-protected residents by 33% and 30%, but this was reduced to 25% in 2015-16. Because of the way the scheme operates, it is subject to two major variables: the actual council tax income that is foregone by the council and the number of claims under the scheme. Obviously, the level of council tax charged for residents has been increasing through the duration of the scheme, whilst the number of claimants has been reducing. However, I would draw members to section 838 on page 24, which does indicate that whilst there has been a fairly substantial drop in the number of claimants, the amount of benefits has not dropped by nearly as much money, that's indicating the effect of the increases in council tax. Cabinet have reviewed the operation of the scheme on two occasions in the last 6 months and are recommending two small technical changes to the detail of the operation of the scheme, the details of which are set out in 8.3 and 8.4, which basically reflect similar changes which have been made for the test for housing benefit. We did go out for consultation. I think it was 34 people responded, and the majority of those were in favour of the changes. The other major factor that was considered was whether the current 25% deduction factor should be amended. As I have noted previously, one of the major variables in the scheme is the level of council tax that we would have to forego to embrace the scheme. And whilst final decisions are still to be made, it is unfortunate that we are expecting the precepts to increase across all the major precepting bodies. With this in mind, and even making allowance for the extremely high collection rates achieved by this council, we do not believe it is appropriate to make any changes to the reduction factor this year, and I recommend that the council continue to discount at 25%. There is one other aspect of these proposals that I need to bring to members' attention, and that is a proposal set out in 826 on page 23. That relates to the funding of these payments that the council receives from central government, and which we pass on to parishes and town and community councils. This was originally set at £91,000. It has, however, reduced over the years in line with the percentage reduction in the general financial settlement that this council receives from DCLG, or I think it's now the Ministry for Health and Communities and Local Government. Section 826 refers to the sum of around £39,000, which it is proposed to pass on to legal organisations in the 2018-19 year. Members will not need me to remind you, however, that this council now finds itself in a situation where we are in a negative revenue support grant position, and we are required to pay council taxpayers' money to the government. Whilst it is the case that RSG is only a proportion of the funds that we receive from government, it is a substantial proportion, and I therefore intend to instruct officers to open discussions with other parishes, town councils and community councils with a view to ending the forwarding of this payment going forward from 1920. That's it, Jeff. I move the recommendations, which are on page 17.
I'm pleased to say that, Mr. Chairman, I reserve my right to speak.
Are we any comfortable to vote on this item? Councillor Howard.
Thanks, Chairman. I think probably, first of all, I'm going to support the recommendation, but really a couple of questions for Councillor Cunningham. In recognising that consultation here, particularly where there are major changes being proposed, we're always going to get a relatively limited response. But I think it would be helpful to consider whether Councillor Cunningham would agree, I think, to take away and continue to review how we consult on this when we may well be looking at some further major changes in future years. And that might include how we consult directly with organisations, whether it's Citizens Advice or other community groups across the district. And the second area, we obviously faced with universal credit rollout in October. Now that's already been proving to be quite detrimental to many local authorities and to council tax reduction schemes like our here. What sort of plans and what sort of work we can begin to put in place to actually to think about how we manage universal credit rollout from October, and what impacts the council planning thinks it might have in any changes that we might need to make to the scheme.
Any more comment? We'll proceed to the vote. Those in favour?
Thank you, Councillor Albert. The view we take on consultation on this is it is an important subject. As I pointed out, the changes this year are, I'm going to say, trivial, because they're not. They are essentially technical and viewed by this council as being pretty non-controversial, to be honest. And on the basis of that, we did undertake a web-based survey. If it is appropriate that we are looking at significant changes to the scheme, I'm happy to give an undertaking that we will identify the most appropriate method of consultation and the scale of the consultation. It is a benefit that affects, I think, 7,000 people across the district, so it's not a trivial matter. I have no issue at all with what Councillor Albert has been saying there. Something of universal credit is actually taken down the Council's tax reduction scheme. But I did ask Mr. Crompton the same question when we were discussing this paper. It's very difficult to say, is the honest answer. Clearly, the revenues and benefits section are deeply into planning for the introduction of this. Mr. Crompton's view, and I hope you won't mind me quoting, is that universal credit is actually probably more likely to impact housing benefit in the immediate terms. And at this point in time, we do not believe that the introduction of universal credit will have a significant impact on the operation of this scheme in this account year. That being said, again, it is changing the ground on which we work, and I'm happy to give an undertaking again that we will look carefully at what has gone on, and particularly the council tax collection rates, which are the area where we like to see the impact.
Councillor Stewart Hanson.
Thank you, Chairman. I should be supporting the recommendations on this item, but I'm very conscious that as part of this item, what our council meeting papers are very big this time, is I think it's 143 pages of appendix. And I just wonder in future, Chairman, whether we could consider a link to the website would be a far better one, saving 143 times at least 50, if not a couple of hundred copies, because it is rather worse.
Just to inform, we can do that, and it's a good idea.
But we have all read them.
Right, can we proceed to the vote now? Those in favour? Any against? Carried. Item 9, review of the council bylaws, consultation outcomes from proposed revocations. This will be reviewed by Jeremy Thompson.
This report. This report comes to you following a lengthy process of consideration of the bylaws that we have. And it last came before you on the 11th of April last year, when you considered all of the bylaws and proposals for revocation and reasons why they were proposed for revocation, which largely relates to the fact that they've been replaced by other pieces of legislation and therefore unnecessary and also archaic in terms of language, etc. And you authorised us to go out for consultation to start such a consultation and revocation. The first public consultation took place on the proposals to revoke between the 11th of July and the 22nd of September last year. We had 34 responses to that, 27 residents and 6 parish councils and 1 community organisation, and there was over 79% in favour of revocation. We're also required to consult on the actual draft revocation bylaws themselves, and that took place between the 20th of November and the 22nd of December. And we only had 2 responses to that on those drafts, both dementors being visitors, 1 in favour and 1 against. You are obviously obliged to consider the consultation responses when coming to decisions whether to proceed with the revocation. It's based on the fact that the first one was overwhelmingly. There was more participants in that, obviously parish council as well. Our recommendation remains to continue with the revocation. There are 2 processes involved in this. One is a slightly shorter one if something falls within the remit of the DCLG, and that is the draft, or basically the revocation bylaw at appendix A at page 183. And if you make that revocation bylaw this evening, it comes into force on the 17th of February. There are obviously consequential steps that we have to take following that, and they're set out under paragraph 8.11, as well as dealing with signage. The second one is for those bylaws that fall under the remit of other central government departments, which we've identified as being the Department of Health, and that's Appendix B at page 185, the Department of Transport at Appendix C, page 189, and DEFRA, which is Appendix D at page 191. And these, if you make them tonight, they have to be confirmed by the relevant secretaries of state. And if they do make them, you've got, again, some consequential steps to take, as well as signage, obviously I set out under 8.12. The recommendations are at 2.1 to 2.4, and I would point out there is a typographical error, that's 2.4, that should say consequential. Happy to answer any questions on the court, Chair.
That's good.
Thank you very much. Members, I don't think I can better what the officer has just told you. I think the report is very clear to understand. It's very easily laid out, as are the appendices. Therefore, members, I would like to move to the recommendations at 2.1, 2.2, 2.3 and 2.4 and recommend those to Council this evening.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to second the recommendation and reserve my right to speak. I'm sad to note the passing of some of these things. I saw the original list and smiled quite a lot, and I don't very often do that when I'm reading council intelligence.
Councillor Billy.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a lovely report as well. And I think there are some very silly old bylaws that's worth getting rid of. I'm very proud that I'm personally allowed to drive my sheep over London Bridge. I rarely get the opportunity or have found it necessary. But the point I really want to make is that whilst we're revoking silly old bylaws, which is a sensible thing to do, I do also think that there are a lot of what we might call modern civic nuisances that might very well benefit from us thinking about the introduction of new bylaws as well as the revoking of old ones. As a twin hatter, I find myself in a lot of situations where the county council decides that something's the responsibility of the district council, and the district council says it's the responsibility of the police, and nothing ever happens about some of these basic civic nuisances. And I wonder whether there would be some mileage, not for my sheep, obviously, but in setting up a group to look at some of these things that we as councillors are dealing with over and over again in terms of our community engagement role, but we don't have an answer, and maybe could have an answer, in what you might call a modern bylaw, as in a modern apprenticeship. And it's just something I wonder whether it could be considered. Thank you.
Councillor Jarvis.
Thank you, Chair. I can't help but draw the comparison between 79% of 34 people and 85% of 7,000, where one is clearly an overwhelming support of the public, and we should press on, and the other is dismissed as an irrelevantly small sample. But there we are. I find it difficult to argue that we shouldn't get rid of bylaws which are archaic or not used. On the other hand, I think the benefit to the people of North Hertfordshire for doing it will be pretty small. In fact, it will be less than pretty small. It's going to be zero. They won't notice. So I'm rather concerned, I suppose, about the amount of effort the council has put into this. So I read the financial implications, and I see it's going to cost us £400. Now, I know that the council doesn't pay its lawyers as generously as in private practice. But my recollection, last time I consulted with a lawyer, is you got about 10 minutes advice for £400, and I think that there's been quite a substantial amount of work put into this activity. So I wonder if we could be told what the real cost of this activity, including all the officer time, is. Because I assume it's not the case that we have officers who have nothing else to do. So is it possible to have an answer to that question?
Chair, I don't have exact figures. The person that led on this was the trainee solicitor, so I'll assume in letters. It's basically myself or my predecessor, Mr. Roach, but yeah, she has spent quite a bit of time on it over the number of years. I'm sorry, I just don't have the number of hours.
Is that something that could be provided?
Certainly, we can see.
Any more comments? Can we see the vote on this item? All those in favour? Against? Carried. Item 10. Item referred from Finance, Audit and Risk Committee, 20th of November 2008, updated financial recommendations. Councillor Holmes.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, this is the annual update to the financial regulations, which came before Park Committee. Your party committee went through those regulations as typed up and took into account the recommendations of officers and the comments from officers. You'll notice in there it says there are changes to the staffing structure, including retirement, for example, of the Chief Director of Finance, policy governance, also to make the whole of the financial regulations much shorter and easier for people to understand. Comprehending news and smart line updates. So nothing major in here. We did have one concern around reporting of revenues over or underspends, and it was 5% the ratio of 5% of £25,000. We asked that to go back to just straight £25,000. We think it's that's a reasonable number for officers to report back, generally speaking, through cabinet as to any over or underspends on revenue items. I see that the motion has been put down by the portfolio holder, which reflects our concerns. And we appreciate that that's been taken into account. So, subject to amendments being moved, and which I will then perhaps second, I move to the recommendations.
Councillor Harwood.
I second that and reserve my right to speak.
Well, we'll go to the amendment now. I'll call on Councillor Cullen to move the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. As Councillor Owen has pointed out, it is intended, with Council's consent, to make a minor change. I'm sure you're all aware that the current constitutional wording actually does have the referral of revenue limits from at 10,000 and it is proposed to increase it to 25. As Councillor Holmes says, the original proposal was 5% or 25, whichever is the greater, but due to the level of some of our budgets, and I'm thinking about things like parking, then it was felt that that was possibly going a trifle too far. And for that reason, I am not recommending to Council we actually change that to simply £25,000, as any variance is over and above that, will be reported to Cabinet. Give members some assurance, because the immediately preceding section does actually continue the existing regulation, whereby all variances over £10,000 have to be reported and agreed through accountancy services. And the Chief Financial Officer will have the discretion to actually report other items below those figures to Cabinet if it feels very appropriate. So I would like to actually move the amendment, which I think has been tabled and is really quite straightforward, and just deletes the section referring to both the greater for 5% of budget for that area and new regulation 3.8. And obviously the consequential amendments, the recommendation when we get there will be as needed.
Councillor Holmes.
Yes, I thank you for picking up on that and making those changes, and I'm pleased to second the amendment. Let's keep up that.
Have any debate on the amendment? Proceed to vote on the amendment then. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. We'll now go to the substantive motion. Any debate on that? No? Well, the substantive, with the amendments, would you like to vote please? Those in favour? Those against? Carried. Item 11. Appointment of the Parish Council. representative to the Standards Committee. So, do you have time to act in one motion? I'm just going to introduce this report.
Thank you, Chair. Simply put, details from the early report, its recommendation to appoint Councillor Gary Hill for Ashby Community Council as the parish representative from the Standards Committee. I'm going to answer any questions, Chair.
Councillor Rice.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm pleased to move the recommendation that the Council confirms the appointment of Councillor Harry Hill from Great Ashby Community Council as a non-voting co-optee of the Standards Committee.
Councillor Meagher.
I'm pleased to second that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Now we need to debate on this item. We'll proceed to the vote. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. Item 12, questions from members. Councillor Stephen.
Those that want a better description try it on.
There are other ways that we can identify relevant bins. For instance, let's put a sticker on it or something like that, which would be really valuable. But I agree with you that there will be teething problems, but we will surmount them, I assure you.
Thank you. Councillor Clark, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'd like to ask the Leader of the Council, in light of the recent issues with Hitchin Town Hall, how does the Leader of the Council to propose to resolve the issue of 14 and 15 Brand Street?
I would like to thank Councillor Clark for his question, and I can assure him that I would very much like to see the matter of the former 14 and 15 Brown Street resolved so that the museum can open with an impressive entrance. I think that is fairly obvious, members, or else I would not have allowed the emergency item to cabinet last March, when I thought the agreement was practically just waiting for the ink to dry. But obviously a lot has been put on the table since then. I would remind members that the Town Hall is open and there have many excellent events held there, and we are enjoying a level of income from that facility. The museum is also open for guided tours since the early summer, and there have been several touring exhibitions which have also proved extremely popular with the residents of North Harts. Could I remind members that the council is not in control of resolving this matter, and officers have been trying to negotiate a solution for nearly 18 months with Hitchin Town Hall Limited and Hitchin Town Hall Finance for us to acquire the land. Those negotiations continue, and I must emphasise to council that the deal must be in the interest of the council taxpayer. We have offered a further date, which is how we are hoping to resolve it. We're hoping for the negotiations to commence. We're looking at a date early in February for a meeting with our advisor. And reports, as members I'm sure will know, are going to be presented to Cabinet next week on alternative options to try, as Councillor Clark says, to resolve this matter should the reopened negotiations not yield any results.
Thank you for that answer, Councillor Neagan. As my supplementary, I'd like to ask, Hitchin Town Hall and Hitchin Town Hall Limited is a properly constituted organisation. What right does this council have to choose what directors of that organisation we deal with?
I don't think we are choosing. This was an agreement that was put in on the table by Hitchin Town Hall Limited right at the very beginning. It was their idea that a line was drawn under the past and those that might have affected the past, and they chose who we would be doing the negotiations with. It is not who we have chosen or who we decide. They asked us to agree to it, we agreed to it, we have tried to stick to it.
Councillor Howard, do you have a question? Thanks, Chairman. In the light of the continuing delays to fully open the North Harts Museum, at the cost of local residents and museum staff, can the Leader provide an update to this Council meeting on the progress of negotiations with Hitchin Town Hall Limited and Hitchin Town Hall Finance Limited?
I would refer Mr. Albert to my previous answer.
Are you sorry?
Oh, yes.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Councillor Needham. I mean, it's good to hear that talks are going to take place and South Korea's talking to North Korea, although perhaps not some natural conservatives talking to Indian conservatives. But I'd like to turn my question is around the paper going to Cabinet next week. Power 8.1 and 8.2 of the paper that is going discusses the latest version of the draft agreement. There have been a number. To avoid any doubt, can Councillor Needham ensure that the Chief Executive does everything in his powers,
including liaising directly with the Hitchin Town Board and the Hitchin Town Board Finance Committee, to ensure that the draft agreement that the Cabinet will be discussing is mutually agreed, if at all possible, as the latest position to which discussions have reached. We don't want to be discussing the wrong version of an agreement.
As I was only aware of Councillor Albert's question earlier this afternoon, I could turn around and say I will give you a written reply. But I'm not actually going to say that, because if you listened to the first reply to Councillor Clark, you will be aware that I have said that we are hoping that negotiations will recommence in early February, as Cabinet is next week. Unfortunately, I won't be able to look at whatever the result of those negotiations after the February meeting. We will be looking at the position as it is now. If I have to call an emergency Cabinet meeting after the early meeting in February, I will not hesitate to do so.
Thank you. We have no notice of motion. That goes to the end of the meeting. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Chair.